I was in my early 20s and a newlywed when you became the head coach. And so I feel like I was able to look up to you. And in many ways, you were a father figure in terms of the way I learned from you, the lessons you taught me. For example, you taught me the importance of hard work. I learned the importance of having a plan and sticking to it. I also learned about the importance of executing the basics and executing the game plan better than the other guys if you want to win. Thank you for your many contributions over the years and for the role that you've played in making the Utah Jazz one of the most respected franchises in the NBA. And thank you for letting us honor you.
I'll just say, as a player, when you're first coming in and being a young player, I don't think we understand the magnitude of things. And maybe I didn't at the time, but when it's all said and done, I look back and it's just, to me, everything just lined up perfect for me as a kid from Louisiana coming to, I thought it was a city initially, but somebody reminded me it was a state. And Coach Lee reminded me through the Jazz parade that it wasn't for me, that it was the days of 47, you know.
I just can't believe my good fortune to be able to play under Jerry Sloan. First of all, a person who I do admire and I respect. We've had an interesting relationship, like a father-son relationship. It's like a big brother relationship. It's like a friend relationship. And I don't know if you get to go through life with many of those opportunities to have that. And I have it right here in one man. And he's never been given anything in his life that he hasn't earned. And tonight's no different. I'm very proud of everything you've done. And
I'm honored to be here, Coach. And I know you used to always tell me, you know, when are you going to get set? You and Coach Jones used to tell me. And I tell you now, I didn't want to disappoint you. I really didn't. I didn't want to disappoint you. I didn't want to disappoint the coaching staff because you guys made it possible for me to be the person I was. And I felt when I came here, I was a young boy and I grew up to be a young man, good or bad or indifferent. But I just want to say that, you know, playing hard was easy because you played the game. Coach, you played the game. You guys did it. And I didn't want to disappoint you guys. I just want to say I'm honored to be here. It's a great day. I'm finally glad you guys were able to twist his arm enough for him to do it. And Coach, we love you. I love you, man. And like I said, you're the best.
I've been blessed. I thought I was a great coach until we lost these guys. Things kind of fell apart there for a while, but I was the most lucky guy in the world to have the opportunity to coach two guys that's willing to pay the price of being good every day. Frank, you're a little bit late. You already talked about you.
That was your first thing.
You
had time.
Exactly right. Those were things I was listening to TV the other day, and somebody said about me being set up to the East Coast trip around Christmas time. Frank set that East Coast trip up, and it worked very well. I've gotten an awful lot of credit for what he taught me and what he helped me with, and I'm very thankful.
Saturday show. Welcome on in. 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Today, I believe we're only on 97.5 FM, however. So, 97.5 FM for the Saturday show. I am Austin Horton with Andy B. Larson, managing editor of SaltCityHoops.com. And our not stats guru, Benjamin Gaines. And behind the glass, as always, faithful, loyal, proud producer, Patrick McGregor's own Bauman. All right, welcome in. Last night, of course, was Jerry Sloan night here at the Energy Solutions Arena. Sadly, the Jazz weren't able to pull out the win over the Warriors as a result. But what we're going to focus a lot on today is the celebration last night, looking back on the life and career of Jerry Sloan to this point. And just also we're going to talk a little about Gordon Hayward, what's going on with him, good, bad, and the ugly with him. And some guy named Enes Kanter can't decide if he's up or down. So that's what's on tap here on the Saturday show. Also, we might dip into a little All-Star weekend preview talk as well. But first of all, you heard it coming in there. That was the sounds and highlights from yesterday's press conference with Jerry Sloan.
Well produced, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And Jerry Sloan, John Stockton, Karl Malone, Greg Miller, of course, Randy Rigby, president of the Jazz, was there as well. You can find individual interviews with all those people online at 1280thezone.com. They all took turns sitting down with the big show at one point or another yesterday. Really well worth the visit. But you were there last night, Andy. I was there as a fan. In fact, I tweeted this out last night. It was the first time, I think, in 6 years that I have been to a Jazz game as a fan.
Wow.
That I, you know, wasn't there, covering something or doing
producing
one job or the other. Yeah. or back in the studio or whatever. This was the actual first. And it was so just growing up in this community and being so married to the Jazz as a little kid all the way through junior high and high school. I wanted to be John Stockton. I lived, breathed, and died by the Jazz.
How did that work out for you, by the way?
I died. And like I said, I lived, breathed, and died.
No, I mean the wanting to become John Stockton.
Oh, yeah. It's still on its way. I'm still working.
So you're the John Stockton of sports radio producers.
Thank you.
In this market.
Well, I'm just waiting for my statue to be built in this market on this station from 3 to 7 weekdays. But it was so cathartic last night to come to this arena and scream my lungs out collectively for Stockton, Malone, and Sloan all at the same time, all at once again. I don't know. What were your thoughts last night?
I mean, even for—
You were here as a member of the media.
Yeah, I was up on Media Row, but even those guys, you know, we took a hiatus from the
stoic
yeah,
staid media
persona that you
have
to be as a media. And, you know, we stood up and clapped and I think gave our appreciation because, you know, all of us media guys are here because of those three men that we had the press conference with yesterday, Sloan, Stockton, and Malone. And, you know, we couldn't help ourselves, quite frankly. We owe not only our careers, but our fandom and everything else to those guys. So, it was a big moment for us. I mean, it was a long day, to be sure. I was here at the building from 4:30 till 1:30, just covering the game and the conference and all that. But, I mean, it's for a Jazz fan, it's a dream come true to have even plus those three guys, the other people who are here, Memo Kerr, Hot Rod Hunley came.
B. Russ.
Yep.
Brian Russell. I mean, Howard Eisley.
Looking like a fullback these days, Brian Russell.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was super great about it, was happy to give interviews about Jerry Sloan. I mean, you could see what this guy meant to all of their individual careers. Frank Layden, I thought, had a really interesting interview that said, no matter if Sloan had been a math teacher, a French teacher, taught chemistry, whatever, he would have been known as a master teacher because that's what he did best.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting to see all these guys of who they crossed paths with Jerry Sloan came back and appreciated what they did for their lives.
Sloan was not only... Sloan, you talked about we owe our fandom to him, our jobs. I owe a lot of my knowledge of basketball, love of basketball, to that era of Utah Jazz basketball. There's kids that, you know, grew up in Cleveland or Washington, D.C. or Seattle now, where they don't have the basketball bug because their teams haven't been good, and so they've grown up watching other sports and loving other sports. Here in this city, in this market, it was basketball from 1989 to 2002 or whatever. We were the Utah Jazz went to, I think, 20 playoff appearances under Jerry Sloan, two Western Conference Finals championships, four appearances, I want to say, in the Western Conference Finals. He had combined, of course, regular season and playoff wins, 1,223 wins, 23 seasons as head coach of the Utah Jazz. And I want to get this right, 244 different coaches came and went in his 23 years with the Jazz in the NBA.
I mean, that's incredible. You look at, like, the people who are Jazz fans now because of Jerry Sloan's and what he did during his tenure. And, of course, Stockton and Malone are a big part of this. But, like, we have people like Jasheem Mazzuho, who was here. He's the one who does all the artist drawings of all the players on the roster and some other players in the NBA. He's just a Jazz fan because of that tenure when Jerry was coaching when he was growing up. I mean, people like Monologue online on Twitter, who runs this fantastic Jazz blog and transcribes everything and has never even been to Utah before. She's just watched Jazz games online. Amar, who runs SLC Dunk, again, never been to Utah, never watched a Jazz game in Energy Solutions Arena in person, and he's dedicating most of his life to following these sorts of things. And yeah, Ben, you too, right?
I grew up in Boston, and I grew up in the Greg Montross era, the Ala Abdelnaby era of the Celtics.
Good.
After Reggie Lewis passed,
really underrated
Larry
era.
Bird had died, and the Celtics cycled through a number of coaches, including Rick Pitino.
I like to call that the consonant era. Boston Celtics.
The consonant era, sure. But you look out, sitting out there in Boston, you look out at what you're doing in Utah at that time, and I became conscious of the Jazz in about 92 or 93 when I started to really get into basketball. And you saw Jerry Sloan, this amazing teacher, this coach, this tough guy that was so – he had this magnetism that was – I think he would probably be uncomfortable with. But – but you, I mean, it was hard not to admire the way they played basketball, the way that he coached. And so, yeah, it was easy to become a Jazz fan from far away.
Was it the wins and losses, or was it kind of a style of play or an aura around the team?
It was both. I would have to, guess, give the nod to the wins and losses, honestly. Okay. I mean, it was the fact that you had this team that was built on the backs of two Olympians and Jerry Sloan. And...
They weren't the most winningest team, right?
No.
In this 93-94 period that you're talking about.
Right. Well, I mean, everyone, all these Celtics fans or children of Celtics fans who were looking elsewhere for teams, you had Michael Jordan,
right.
And, you know, there was a huge gravitation toward Michael Jordan. You had the new franchises that sold a lot of starter jackets back in that era, the Charlotte Hornets, and I guess the Heat were in that same bunch, but... there was something really compelling about this team and the way they played and the fact that they won all these games and they had the big man who, you know, everyone wanted to be because he was so muscular and strong and his game was so powerful. And they had, you know, the little guy who realistically was
a big man in
his
head. Yeah.
more like all of us than Karl Malone was. And it was just, I don't know. It's hard to describe. I'm sort of at a loss to describe how I got here, but it's like you said, there are all these fans all over the world, really. And when we talk about Jazz Nation, which I know is a bit of a cliche, but when we talk about when we use capital N Nation there, that's because Jerry Sloan and Karl Malone and John Stockton did what they did for as long as they did and drew all these people to them, and it was and that's why I think everyone was. Cathartic is a great word for it.
When you think of sports franchises, professional franchises, you think of star players. You might think of a logo or something. When you think of the Utah Jazz, three people come to mind: John Stockton, Karl Malone, and Jerry Sloan. Around the world.
Yeah,
he's
not
recognized.
Only thinking of Utah Jazz, but thinking of Salt Lake City and Utah in general.
Okay.
I mean, I
Very
have friends
good.
Like who are on Fulbright trips in Korea, and they say that they're from Utah, and they say Stockton Malone.
Yeah.
Like, how incredible is it that this organization has come to represent an entire state, an entire place where millions of people live?
Well,
it's amazing.
And you look in the fan stores, and you can get a Jerry Sloan shirt. You can get a Jerry Sloan hat. You can get a John Deere hat. You can get a Jerry Sloan keychain. You can get a Jerry Sloan stuffed animal.
There aren't a lot of coaches that...
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Name another coach that you think of that has his own line of merchandise in the
NBA.
Yeah,
that's tough. I mean...
Phil Jackson?
Phil Jackson, probably.
Who else? Pat Riley used to.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
So
I would buy some pop merchandise.
That's a good point.
There's a market there.
In fact, tweet us your idea for pop merchandise. You can also get us on the phone. Give us your thoughts and memories of Jerry Sloan, 855-340-ZONE, or text us 64636, keyword zone, and then your message. It was just, like I said, it was really a lot of fun to be there last night. Coach Sloan was obviously uncomfortable with the recognition, as he always has been and always is and always will be, but he handled it well. It was fun to see all the players come back. It was fun to see the little video interviews that they did with other NBA people like Kenny Smith and Shaquille O'Neal and Pat Riley, and they had Greg Ostertag made an appearance on that, which he and Sloan's relationship was anything but peaceful.
Right.
For both of their faults at points or whatever, but it was a lot of fun to see that.
I mean, I think it's amazing that Barack Obama, the president of the United States, wrote a handwritten letter to Jerry Sloan, who, didn't win a championship and retired 3 years ago.
Yeah, and President Obama, obviously a huge basketball fan, and when he thinks of the Jazz, he has to think of those three guys we mentioned.
Yeah.
And then, of course, former commissioner David Stern sending his farewell and thanks as well. Someone wasn't there last night, and it saddened my heart.
I'm glad you noticed.
Yeah,
I had to stay home with the kid.
just a small little shout out to Jazz Bear today, who I guess suffered a cut on his head during pregame warmups yesterday performing a stunt, and was unable to be there last night. Only his third missed game since becoming the mascot of the Jazz. It's crazy, isn't it? He's been there every game.
Well, what's crazy is that one of his three missed games
and
happens to be Jerry Sloan night.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That shows you how bad that must have been, that bad of an injury,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They would hold him out because you know Bear – at all costs, would not miss that game.
Yeah. And I don't want to spend too much time on the Jazz Bear. I'm trying to slowly work in, trying to get him to do an interview on this show. We'll have to disguise his voice or whatever. But I think it'd be a gas to have him on. But anyway, well wishes to him. One memory, they did show some highlights and clips and still photos of Sloan's career, and I loved that they didn't leave out the pictures of him going after referees with Phil Johnson holding him back. And trying to get between him and holding him back from the referees. There was twice in his career that he wasn't held back. Of course, he missed a game, I think, in 93 for shoving Bob Delaney. He was suspended a game. And then in 2006, I could be wrong on the
I think before that,
year
but...
there, he shoved Courtney Kirkland and served seven games. A seven-game suspension. Oh, 2003. It was up in Sacramento. Delaney was in 93. But so 10 years later, he shoved another referee. But if you... If you believe in Jerry Sloan, the man, you know that he doesn't look back on those memories and think, yeah, I sure got them. He doesn't look back on those fondly. But I'm glad they included those still shots of him in the game last night.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, on Salt City Hoops yesterday, we put up the video of him and Rashid going at it in the playoffs in 1999. I mean, he was legitimately threatening to fight Rashid Wallace, who's, I mean, Sloan's not a small guy, but Rashid Wallace is a gigantic individual.
It's one of the great moments in Sloan history. It really is.
And yeah, what, Sloan's like 60 at the time, and I don't know. That's amazing.
My favorite memory of Jerry Sloan has to be after the shot in Houston, when he's running around kind of Jim Valvano-esque, running around trying to hug people and throws his arms in the middle, is hugging Karl Malone, slapping guys on the rear. It's like that. I never saw that from Jerry Sloan until that moment. I knew Jerry Sloan as a cantankerous, ornery, mean cuss who was going to win basketball games at any cost. And then here he is running around like a madman with a smile the size of the Joker's smile on his face. And that, I think, is when I really fell in love with Sloan. Growing up in elementary school, junior high, and high school, you would hear from Jazz haters, I want to call them, that Sloan needed to go, that he needed to be fired, that his time was past, he was too old school. And that was, now looking back, I was so glad last night to see that everyone in that arena, at one point or another, it's very likely that a lot of those people said, out of frustration with losses or, you know, back-to-back finals losses, we need to get a new coach or whatever. But then last night, everyone in that arena came to the realization that, no, this is probably the greatest thing that ever happened to the Jazz as far as coaching goes, and probably the greatest thing that ever happened to the Western Conference of the NBA as far as coaching goes. He doesn't have the most overall wins, but I think he's a better coach than Don Nelson. It's he doesn't have more wins than him, but come on.
I mean, like the end of Don Nelson's tenure, especially with the Warriors, was kind of pathetic in far as how transparently he was just chasing this win record and then going to be ditching out. I mean, anyway.
In fact, ESPN the magazine did a fantastic interview with Don Nelson at his house in Hawaii last month. It's a really good read. Go read it. It's what he's doing now, just smoking pot and playing poker with celebrities. It's ridiculous, but... It's a travesty that Sloan is not above him on that all-time wins list. But anyway, like I said, get us on Twitter. I'm at Austin Horton, at Andy B. Larson, at Benjamin Gaines, at McGregor Zone. Also, at SCH Saturday Show, if you want to give us a follow there. Tell us your Sloan memories and favorite moments from his career. Text us 64636, keyword zone, and then your message. And also, you can call us 855-340-ZONE. Let's see. Get your Greg Popovich duct tape at Home Depot, says 0884. Because,
That'd be
you
nice.
Put it around the reporters' mouths or whatever. I'd like that. Yeah,
also well played, 0884.
Tweet us in Texas your Greg Popovich merchandising ideas. It was great to see they handed out some John Deere hats with Jerry Sloan on the side of it last
night. There
was
a great moment last night when a reporter asked Jerry if he was enjoying the ceremony, and Jerry responded, "Well, I was until you showed up." I thought that was particularly Jerry-esque.
That's fun. All right, we are going to take our first break here. When we come back, we're going to still talk about Sloan memories and things as they roll in, but Gordon Hayward was really bad last night. Benjamin Gaines tells you whether or not you should panic or whether or not you're allowed to panic right here on The Saturday Show.
and my man Steve Rowland. We're kicking the flow.
We're kicking the flow.
And it goes a little something like this.
Tag team. It is the Saturday show here on the Zone Sports Network. Austin Horton, Andy B. Larson, Benjamin Gaines, and behind the glass, Patrick McGregor, Zone Bauman. Get us on Twitter. Find us all there. Get us on the text line, 64636, keyword zone, and then your message. Or give us a call, 855-340-ZONE, 855-340-9663. Looking back on the life and career of Jerry Sloan as head coach of the Utah Jazz, last night was Jerry Sloan night here at the arena. A banner was raised. We are sharing your memories here on the text line. In fact, number 6149 texts in and says, how about Chris Webber versus Jerry Sloan? Webber admitted to being legitimately scared, and we, all three of us, were like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Chris Webber said he was really scared. Gordon Monson, he's shared this quote a few times this week, but in case you missed it, it's fantastic. Frank Layden in 1996 told Gordon Monson this about Sloan. Nobody fights with Jerry because you know the price would be too high. You might come out the winner. At his age, you might even lick him, but you'd lose an eye, an arm, your testicles in the process. Everything would be gone. He's a throwback blue-collar guy, a dirt farmer. I know you're going to think I'm kidding when I say this, but I saw Jerry Sloan fight at the Alamo. I saw him at Harper's Ferry. I saw him at Pearl Harbor. He's loyal. He's a hard worker. He's a man. And I think Chris Webber, in not as many words, said, yeah, I second that notion. When he said, I'm legitimately scared to fight Jerry Sloan. Anyway, get us on the text line and Twitter and all that with your thoughts and feelings. Last night, what if I told you that the Jazz went up against the Golden State Warriors and outscored their bench 48-12, shot 48% to Golden State's 38% from the field, and lost 95-90? Would you believe me?
With the injuries the Jazz had yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's just, we had no power forward, and that tends to cost you.
Marvin Williams being out, too. Derek Favors.
Derek Favors, and then Jeremy Evans got hurt mid-game, too. Yeah. So we allowed, the Jazz. The Jazz allowed 14 offensive rebounds last night compared to getting only 6. So that gives them 8 more chances to score. And the Jazz had 18 turnovers compared to just 8 for the Golden State Warriors. And so as a result, they had 15 more shots. That's your ball game.
So Gordon Hayward had as many turnovers as Golden State's entire team.
Correct.
Yeah. Gordon Hayward last night, a rough night for number 20. His line last night was very bad. 3 of 10 in 40 minutes played. He did make both free throws, but he scored 8 points. He was -7 and 8 turnovers. Just not a good night for Gordon. Benjamin Gaines was on fire on Twitter last night on Gordon Hayward, and he wants to tell you, the fan, how you should or shouldn't react.
I'm not telling anyone how they should react. All I'm saying is I have noticed as I listen to the station and I hear the way that fans talk, and I follow many fans on Twitter, the way that we talk about Gordon Hayward seems to vacillate so greatly from game to game. He dropped that 37-point game on
Oklahoma City.
On Oklahoma City, that's right. Scores 37 against Oklahoma City. Everyone says sign him to that max money deal that he's going to be looking for at the end of this year. Then he has a game like this, 8 turnovers, or that 1-for-17 game earlier in the season, and everyone says, is this guy even a viable NBA starter? Is this I didn't hear this because I was watching the Root Sports feed last night instead of the ESPN feed, but apparently John Barry said Gordon Hayward would be a great number one option at Fort Wayne in the D League. I don't know if he actually said that.
Wonder how many games John Barry has watched before last night.
He's
that's an asinine comment.
It is a stupid comment, but that's exactly my point. We need to not overreact to games like this. Hayward had 8 turnovers. It was a terrible game, including, and it's not just 8 turnovers. There were 2 or 3 late in the fourth quarter when the Jazz really needed him to step up and take care of the basketball.
Yeah,
and he had the one that was knocked out off of his leg. He had another one.
Corbin drew up a play for Gordon with 1:20 left. The Jazz needed a score. They were down 5.
Yeah.
Needed a score. He drew it up for Gordon. It was isolation for Gordon. Gordon was having arguably his worst night in 2 seasons. Why draw the play up for Gordon Hayward at that moment? Alec Burks was getting anything and everything.
That's what I completely don't get. And then because Andre Iguodala, maybe the best defender in the league, was guarding Hayward.
Right.
You know, we have to admit that that's part of why Gordon Hayward struggled, right?
Yes.
It's not all Gordon Hayward just dropping the ball off his foot.
Exactly.
He's being defended at a really high level. So, yeah, to call that play then for Gordon Hayward doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And you're right, after the game we asked him about it, and he defended that decision. You know, I'm pulling up the quote here, but...
Yeah. Well, he's done it several times this year and last year. He draws up the play for Gordon Hayward to finish the game. He has faith and confidence in. What did he say last night about it?
Aaron Falk asked if he had any regrets about calling that final play for Hayward that you referenced, and he says, no regrets, none whatsoever. I feel very confident in what he can do for this team. Okay, that's like, yeah, Gordon Hayward, you know, will be fine moving forward, but you have to look at your matchups, you have to look at what's going on the floor.
You have to look at that
Gordon game. Hayward might be your star, but that doesn't mean you should go hero ball Gordon Hayward and try to see, you know, make that what happens.
You had to get points in that position, whether it was one of two at the free throw line, whether it was a three ball, whether it was a layup, whether it was a 10-foot jumper from Enes Kanter, whether Alec Burks got there for an and one. You had to get points. You couldn't turn the ball over, and that's what they did. Ended up being Hayward's eighth turnover of the night. Yes, he was defended by, like Andy said, arguably the best defender in the league in Andre Iguodala, but there's other guys on the floor. And Coach Corbin, I think, made a mistake last night in drawing up that play for Hayward, who was being defended by Andre Iguodala and was not having success. You have to look at the other guys. You have to look at each game as a moment-by-moment basis. They say that to us all the time. Take it a game at a time. Take it a play at a time. Well, then live what you preach, you know. And I don't want to kill Ty Corbin too much. He's a young coach. He made a mistake, and hopefully he learned from it. Hopefully that's just coach speak in the media. Yeah. You don't want to hear him say, oh, yeah, I totally messed that up. That's on me. No, although that wouldn't be too bad either.
I think that's the right thing to say. Yeah. You know, maybe I shouldn't have made that call. You know,
you can say I have faith in Hayward, but maybe I should have gone somewhere else.
Jerry talked about this last night, is that he, I guess Jerry didn't talk about it, but Stockton and Malone talked about how he would always take the blame for those sorts of things in the media huddle, because that kind of allowed the pressure off of his players. And he admitted that, you know, sometimes maybe he didn't put his players in the best of situations when it really counted. I mean, he was regretful that he called the play in Chicago, for example. That's not the kind of thing that we're really talking about, right?
Right.
But allowing your players to not feel all of that pressure on them. I mean, Gordon Hayward looked despondent after last night, and I think rightfully so, but it'd be nice to have a little bit of support from your coach that's not just, I support my guy completely, it's maybe I made a mistake here, and this isn't on Gordon.
But how much of Corbin's opaqueness in that way is due to his situation, his contract situation, his career situation?
I don't know how much, because I feel like he's been this way since he's been hired as coach, right? He's always kind of been defensive while not necessarily taking the blame, if that
makes
sense.
I don't know if he's going to, in that moment, in that huddle, be like, okay, I could send this to Alec Burks or Enes Kanter, but I have a contract situation.
No. Not
in the media
decision. Right. The way he talks about it, the way, you know, Sloan being, and I think part of that is just who Sloan is. And I think it's a good quality of leadership to be willing to take on some of the blame, even sometimes if the blame isn't really you. I mean, even if you made the right call, you take the pressure off of your people, like you said. But Sloan had the cachet to do that. I mean, he walked on water. Corbin's trying to feel out his next move. He doesn't know where he's going to be next year for sure yet. And, you know, there may be, that said, I'm probably reading way too much into this. I can't imagine that 29 other GMs are looking at what Corbin said after this game.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is, including John Barry.
But I do think it, you know, it may say something about the style of coach and leader that Corbin is.
But let's talk about this for a second. Alec Burks last night just continues to be great. 26 points, 9 of 14 shooting, 34 minutes off the bench. He only missed one free throw, which...
Three or four highlight reel layups.
Oh, he shot one backwards, and it went in. Yeah. It was like Hornacek-esque. But he did it on purpose,
and we actually got a tweet, by the way, from the folks at SLC Dunk asking us to talk about the fact that Burke's backward reverse layups are better than Derek Fisher's forward front facing layups.
Rolls, yeah. Well, I brought up that he missed one free throw for one reason only. He was awful at free throws his first two seasons, and he's really made a conscious improvement. He's made an improvement there on purpose. He's doing it on purpose.
Good.
He's not just lucking into it. Deontay Garrett was good last night. When Burke was struggling, he came in and played well. if you believe in plus minus, plus 24 on the field, 13 points from Deonte Garrett.
Yeah, when no other player was too bad on defense. Had more than plus or minus 10 either way, Deonte Garrett was a plus 24 in a game that the Jazz lost by 5. I thought he was great last night, both offensively and defensively. I mean, Steph Curry scored 44 points, so it's weird to say that he played great defensively.
Could have
but
scored
only
64, too.
16 of those points came in the 26 minutes Deonte was on the floor. So in the other 18 minutes, if I'm doing the math right, I don't know that
yeah,
I am,
whatever.
22 minutes. I'm a math major. I should probably know this. In the other 22 minutes in which Trey Burke was playing, that's when Curry got most of his points, right? So I think Deonte's size helped him defend Curry and get him around those kind of screens that Golden State sets for him. And then the offense was the best we've ever seen from Deonte. He had a career-high 13 points as well. So I was impressed. Going to Gordon Hayward really quick, I thought his secondary production was very good. Like, so he had 9 rebounds last night, 5 assists. His primary starting matchup, Klay Thompson, was held to 3 for 20
Thompson
shooting.
Thompson was terrible.
Which
yeah.
is, you know, terrible, right?
Well, and he
so you know, it's nice when he's losing the ball and not scoring that he can do these kind of secondary production
yes.
things. That's what you like to see out of a well-rounded player.
Yes,
least.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he still had 9 rebounds and 5 assists and all that. It's
right.
It's just, but you still got to have better production on the offensive side of things, and especially if you're being drawn up for the play that you need points.
We
on.
Just need to keep in mind that a game like that from Gordon Hayward does not change the way that other GMs look at him or. Likely
right.
the way that the Jazz organization looks at him in their future.
But as a fan, I think you're allowed to overreact. I don't think you,
fans are allowed yeah. to overreact. I'm just saying
for 50 next week, I'm going to say
when
sign
we rip
into
the
a
general
max.
Manager. When we rip the general manager for making a move or
yeah,
not
true.
Making a move, we need to keep in mind that they have a perspective that we as fans don't have. Not
true.
just because they're inside the organization, but because they don't overreact the way that we do, and that's why you see them stick with a guy who's struggling. That's why you don't see them cut someone who. You know,
they won't
who's
cut
terrible.
Gordon Hayward after last night.
That's why. I mean, I don't like take Anthony Bennett for example.
Right.
You know,
let's
like
not.
There are fans, I'm sure, in Cleveland who want him just cut, gone. Like, just he's a waste.
Like all of,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
including Dan Gilbert.
He will probably. If I had to bet money, I would say he turns out to be a bust. But you stick with a guy because you don't overreact to
right.
what he does in a game or a few games or maybe even in a season.
But something like Jackson Emery's tweet last night, which I don't know if you guys saw, but quote
no.
unquote, Hayward is a, yeah, I just saw because it was retweeted into my timeline so often, but quote unquote, Hayward is a turnover machine right now. That is why the Jazz can't pay him the big bucks that he wants.
Thanks, Jackson.
That's a sort of like,
call us when you've made it to the league, my friend.
That's the sort
yeah.
of thing that you
Marshall
know,
Henderson
make a
says
lot
you
sense.
Turned it over. Oh, boom, roasted.
Oh,
Jackson Emery was a really
is.
Good player. What? You know who Marshall Henderson is? Plays for Ole Miss.
Oh, he's
the guy
best.
That played at Utah.
He's the
backhanded
best.
Jackson Emery.
Oh, love okay. Marshall Henderson. This is the
You're
guy who got
me.
Up.
You love him?
Oh, he's so. We're going to see like an on-court stabbing at some point.
And
I mean,
so you love him?
I don't love him
Goodness
for that.
Gracious.
But he is.
I could see him doing lines
is,
in the huddle.
He is must-see TV. That's what I love about him. So this is the guy. He hits a game winner to beat Auburn. He plays for Ole Miss now. He hits a game winner to beat Auburn. He hops up at Auburn. He hops up on the table in front of the Auburn student section and just holds up his jersey like you do when you're at home. Except he's in front of the student section. You go look it up on YouTube. Fans are flipping him off. You've got this one security guy who's just laughing at him. It's
good. He's
it
a
is,
clown.
It was an awesome scene from like just from a. I have no idea what's going to happen. Is this going to be a Malice at the Palace kind of a situation?
Anyway, that's enough Marshall Henderson talk.
Yeah.
I'm getting angry. Point being, Alec Burks, 7th time last night. He went for 20 plus. He's gone for 30 plus twice. Yeah, this season. He's really improved. I think that he deserves all the accolades and more that could come his way. He is in this season of sometimes despair. Like
yeah.
sometimes none of the players on the floor look to know what they're doing. He somehow turns up well and does a good job. But then he'll also go back to being one of those players the next night that's just wandering around
sure.
looking like he doesn't know what
this
he's doing.
This is the first year that he's gotten significant minutes.
Yeah.
And but, yeah, I think since it was that first month
Same
of the
Ennis.
Season, if memory serves, the first month of the season, Burke struggled. But since then, yeah, I mean, this is the season that I think Jazz fans were hoping for out of Alec Burks.
All right, when we come back, we're going to now talk a little bit about Enes Kanter. Speaking of overreactions, right here on the Saturday show on the Zone Sports Network. Welcome back to the Saturday Show. Austin Horton here with two grumpy pants, honorary sasses.
What?
Whoa, hey there.
Do we have to talk about Enes Kanter again?
That was Ben.
Blah. It's been a month of Enes. Yes, we have to talk about Enes Kanter.
We should celebrate the month of Enes.
We have to discuss why he's so good and then why he's so bad and how we're going to fix it.
So what do you think
better.
He was last night?
Depends on what side of the floor you're talking about. His offensive line, fantastic. But on defensive side of things, he looked completely lost. He looked like he was a blind man walking around. And
he
had 7 rebounds, could have had 12 if he had been hustling and been aware. In fact, you saw Coach Colburn, I think halfway through the third quarter, maybe early fourth quarter, stomping his feet and throwing his hands in Enes. Well, I just
break
the microphone.
Yeah, but he does
throwing his hands in Enes's face.
And I mean,
and he well deserved. And like
Ben just
said,
that's how he always is with
Enes,
even if he's playing well.
Ate him for dinner and spit him out and ate him up again. He regurgitated Enes Kanter and ate him again. And Enes Kanter needs to play like he's 6'11", not like he's 6'2".
Yeah, although, I mean, Bogut's a tough matchup. He's thick.
I don't care.
He's angry.
You're the number 3 overall pick.
So if
you started
if you look
last
at,
night.
Yeah. No, I
don't care what Andrew Bogut is.
So did Jeremy.
He's not Hakeem
Olajuwon.
He's
the number 1 overall
he's
pick.
He's not
no
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah. Bogut's the number 1 overall pick.
Fine.
1 is less than 3, so I don't know.
My point being, Enes Kanter is so inconsistent, it's maddening.
It is maddening.
Because
I don't know that he's inconsistent at this point. Look, he's been bad at defense all season long, right? Has there been a time when he's been good at defense this year?
Sure, no.
And he's been goodish offensively. I mean, last night, 6-for-10, goodish, right? 15 points, goodish, 7 rebounds. Okay. I mean, this is who Enes Kanter is at this point, I feel like.
But then Rudy Gobert comes in, and yeah, he's not an offensive powerhouse. He's not going to do much for you on offense. But man, you can't drive the lane on Rudy Gobert, even if you are Andrew Bogut. Did you see the times that he swatted Andrew Bogut?
Yes.
Bogut looked up like, whoa, where did you come
Gobert
from?
Gobert had a very nice defensive
game
come
from France.
At times. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just too bad we can't somehow mesh the two of them into one player. Which we've said that about Enes Kanter and Derek Favors for a long time too. Now, it can't be overlooked how much Derek Favors means to this team. Last night would have been such a different story with Derek Favors on the floor. Clint Knight points out on Twitter at SEH Saturday Show that maybe going to Gordon wasn't the bad move by Corbin last night because earlier in this year against the Lakers, Gordon set up on that same play Derek Favors for the game winner. But Favors wasn't on the floor last night.
Right.
So it would have been a completely different story. And Marvin Williams is integral this season as well for the Jazz. So missing those two guys last night, that was a big blow. Nevertheless, the Jazz had a 13-point lead and blew it. They should have won the game yesterday. There's just no way.
Well, no lead is safe with a team like that, though.
Well,
especially
Steph Curry.
Curry's hitting 30-foot threes
at
will.
Right. Which he is just – stop it. He's so amazing. Would you rather – who's the better shooter? Kevin Durant – I asked you this in the break. Kevin Durant or Steph Curry?
I think it's Durant by just a little bit. I mean, Steph's three-point
pure shooter,
average.
Though? I mean, how much of that is Durant being able to – like,
let's say unguarded three-point contest. Who do you want, Steph Curry or
Curry
Kevin
wins
Durant?
All day.
Curry.
Every day.
Curry wins.
Curry.
Okay.
But that said, I mean, if what you're asking is who do you take, there's a no-brainer. You take Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
You take the 6'10 guy who's in this conversation.
What about a game of lightning?
Curry's only shooting 40% from three this year instead of 45 like he has in years past. I mean, like, there's some...
Yeah, 40's a bad year.
There's no doubt. But I just think I still take Durant based on what he's done this season.
Absolutely. You know, if you're starting the team, it's no question you're going to take Durant over Steph Curry. I'm just asking from a shooter standpoint.
It'll be interesting to watch this three-point shootout. I think this is maybe the best three-point shootout in the All-Star game
this
year.
Reset who's in it for us?
I don't think it's been announced yet, has it?
Oh, okay. I thought it had been. I thought that's
well,
weird.
Then how do we know it's the most interesting?
That's why I
thought. Well, okay, presuming that those two guys come in. I mean, my bad. I would hope that the NBA has the foresight to invite both Kevin Durant and Steph Curry to his 3-point contest.
Who else would you want? Kyle Korver?
Kyle Korver. Yeah. Zach Lowe had an article on this. Channing Frye. He wanted Channing Frye. I like that pick.
I don't.
Just instead of Kevin Love, which I can see. I can't remember who else was on his list. But
Do you guys like the All-Star stuff? Do you like all that hoopla?
All right, how much time do we have?
You got 2.5 minutes.
So not only do I
wait, I know where you
wait,
stand.
Wait, you dislike it?
You're crankshaft. You are like
not
75
only do I
years
dislike
old.
The Sandlot.
I hate the 3-point line, and I hate the shot
I love
clock.
The 3-point.
And
I love the 3-point.
Okay, why don't you like All Star Saturday?
I even like Tom Haberstroh's idea of
I
having a 4-point line.
I want to drink my soup.
why do I dislike it? I just so.
Where are my dentures?
The game is okay. I mean, I don't mind
the
watching.
The game is the worst part of All Star Saturday or the All Star Weekend
because they don't play defense and
right.
It's just. I mean, yeah, it's. But I mean, it's basketball.
Basketball.
I can
no,
watch
no,
it.
No, okay.
The dunk contest is the worst.
Super cool.
It is the worst. Dunks are only exciting in the context of an
no.
actual competition.
No, that's not true. But, in terms of like,
it's I'm okay with the dunk contest how it is. It's a circus, but it's still entertaining. But what Ben just said is what Ian Thompson was saying, which I think is just the best idea ever. Have three guys or four, you know, have three guys play three, you know, one-on-one or whatever in an actual game to 10. Or the first one to dunk three times wins.
Something like
I want that.
And
to be
you can
a
only
event.
Score.
Yeah. Because
you can only
wanna,
score by dunking.
I want to
and
see,
have it be like Nate Robinson and who else is short and little that can dunk?
Yeah, but
not Trey
then
Burke.
You just defend the rim, right? I don't know that you just foul guys in that case, right? And don't let them dunk. It's a stupid contest. I think.
I mean, you take a big dunk in a game context. Look at like that Paul George dunk from a couple
that
weeks ago.
That was cool.
That was nuts. And that
yes.
was in
that
a game
was
that
unsportsmanlike.
That counted for 2 points and helped the Pacers actually win a game that's going to count in the standings.
But I'm interested in
them.
What people can are capable of. Right? Like, how cool is it that, like, Dwight Howard can touch the top of the backboard and then dunk it? Or how cool is it that JaVale McGee can dunk three balls at once? Like, this
or,
sort of stuff is really, really
Jeremy
cool.
Jeremy Evans.
Or Jeremy Evans. Yeah, our own Jeremy Evans doing
draw
some
a painting of himself.
Stuff. Like,
yeah.
Too bad. He probably won't go now that he got injured yesterday.
Yeah.
That's not, yeah, I don't know. It's just not my deal. The three-point competition... Kind of, I feel a little bit the same way I do about the dunk contest, but it's more watchable in my mind.
Well, I'm with Andy. I like the Saturday stuff. I don't really like the Sunday stuff. It's just the way I roll. But
the NBA, although the Pro Bowl took a big leap this year toward watchability, but the NBA
what?
Still has the.
Did you watch the Pro Bowl?
I did. Yeah, it was better than any year that I can remember.
Okay, but it was still bad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a big step forward. It's still not to the point where I'd watch it. But I'm
but
not
the
a,
NBA.
I'm
is...
not a big All-Star game guy. But the NBA has the best set of events and
sure.
game.
Sure.
Even though you don't like the game, it's still better.
No, you still
in my
watch
mind.
It.
What about the baseball All-Star game?
Nah.
I like the All-Star game,
and I like the home run derby. But I'm a baseball nerd.
Here's what I hate about. Here's what I hate about the baseball All-Star game, and then I'll shut up because you guys are sick of hearing me talk about this.
The Ultimate Fighting guys can go until the
each
top of the hour.
Pitcher,
we can go to the top of the hour.
Each pitcher getting like an inning or a third of an inning
okay.
or two-thirds. I mean, it's just like, stop.
But at least you get
let
the best
pitch,
stuff out there. You know?
I guess, but it's just, I don't know, it doesn't feel right.
Anyway, tune in tonight. Jazz coverage starts at 7:30. They'll be in L.A. to take on the Clippers. Also tomorrow, Peyton Manning is going to become the first starting quarterback in NFL history to win a Super Bowl with two different teams.
Premature congratulations to Peyton Manning.
We will see you next week right here on the Saturday Show. Go Down Swingin'.